You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Tuesday, March 12th. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at fearthesword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show, and you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. On today's show, I'm going to get into the good and the bad of the Cavs' surprising 126-100 win over the Toronto Raptors, a win that came out of nowhere for me a little bit. Toronto was in the second half of a back-to-back in Miami, but they did have Kawhi Leonard, they did have Gasol, Lowry, etc. But a good win for the Cavs as they go into their own back-to-back playing Philadelphia tomorrow night. So we'll get into the good and the bad of that Cavs-Raptors game. And then I'll get you ready for Cavs 76ers, which tips off tomorrow at 7 p.m. in Philly. So to just hop right into the good of the Raptors game, look, a Cavs win is good. My general thing here is that the Cavs are still making a lot of mistakes. So they get the big picture win, and that is fundamentally just a good thing for this group. You saw how much I think this meant to this group. But for me, even though they're still making mistakes, even though there's little things where I would nitpick and say I'd have concerns about not just this season, but going forward about this group and about what they could be, this is a Cavs team that is no longer playing with everything imploding around it. They are no longer playing in a situation where they just can't function, right? Like, they are no longer vexed by the sight of a zone defense. They are no longer just completely inept and not trying and not hustling and not pushing for loose balls and things. This is a group that actually has some investment in it. This is stuff that was not happening earlier in the year. I think Kevin Love being back is a big thing. I think the health, I think some of the buoyancy they're kind of having in recent games kind of does stem from Love, but there's a lot of other things I think that have just contributed to it. This is a group that has come together more for whatever reason, and I think this was a really good example of that. I wrote about this in my 2-for-1 over at Fear the Sword, which you can check out by clicking it in the show notes below. But for me, this was a time where the Cavs really looked like an NBA team. This was a Cavs team that did not have Matthew Dellavedova, Larry Nance Jr., Tristan Thompson, John Henson, J.R. Smith, technically, although he has not been with the team in months. Those six guys, including J.R., that are being paid salary by the Cleveland Cavaliers are useful NBA players. All of them are good. All of them are better than some of the guys that played in this game. This is a team that struggled to get Kevin Love open looks in the first half. There was a point in this game where we saw Larry Drew play a lineup of Colin Sexton, Jordan Clarkson, Nick Stauskas, David Nwaba, and Marquese Chris. And this was several minutes in a row and on purpose. The Raptors had Kawhi Leonard. It would not have been shocking to me to see the Cavs get cream, but this is a team that fought for loose balls, nabbed offensive rebounds. They stayed resilient when the Raptors looked like they might be taking control of the game. Colin Sexton was awesome. More on him in a minute. Ante Zizic, I think, outplayed Marc Gasol on both ends of the floor. We'll get to him in a minute. Marquese Chris really pissed off Serge Ibaka, and this team just really came together. Everyone contributed. It was good to see. So that to me is the big kind of kumbaya takeaway from this game. Ante Zizic, let's get to him first. I loved this Ante Zizic game. Going against Marc Gasol is not an easy task. Gasol maybe is not what he was a few seasons ago, is not what he was in his prime when he was the real one of the hearts of that Memphis grit and grind group. But Ante Zizic comes out in this game, 8-12 from the field. Only got to the line once, which is eh, but 7 boards, 3 offensive rebounds, 4 on the defensive glass. Didn't commit any turnovers, had 3 turnovers, no blocks, no assists, but scored, was getting rebounds, and was active inside. On the defensive end, he's not a shot blocker, so I wouldn't say it's a concern, for example, that he isn't blocking shots, but this is a guy that moved his body well, was getting into the right position, only committed 1 foul, was useful on that end and was altering shots, which is what you sort of want a guy with his athletic profile to do. So really, really good Ante game. Very impressed with his touch. And he also hit a shot from the about little back for the three throw line. So a nice little touch on that jumper from the big Croatian as well. Looking at Brandon Knight now, 4-9 from the field for him. You know, sometimes I think he does kind of get into his own bag a little bit and is really focused on way too much on what is sort of going on in front of him. But he's got a nice crossover. He's got a really nice floater. He can create. He's confident taking threes. He passes the ball. The guy's useful. And I think this game you saw that. And he had some big shots, especially in the first half when Love kind of struggled to get going a little bit. This was a really good Colin Sexton game. So I wasn't sure he could follow up what he did the other night against the Miami Heat. Or it followed up in a way that was positive. But Colin Sexton comes out in 36 minutes, 10 of 18 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3, went to the line 4 times, all in the first half, 4 boards, 5 assists, 3 fouls, no turnovers for him, which is probably the most important thing. Larry Drew, called this the most complete game that Colin Sexton has played, at least, you know, kind of post-game in that environment there. You saw Colin Sexton, I think, really kind of do a lot of the things you want to see from him. The shots he missed are the things we're going to talk about in the negative, where it's concerning that he's missing these floaters and is struggling between that 3 and 10 feet in the rim, or between 3 and 10 feet near the rim. That's troublesome. But he made some threes. He had the 10-point third quarter. He was aggressive in the first half of getting to the line. He showed some patience in not just rushing into shots when he drove, but maybe looking for the shooter in the corner or resetting the offense. Colin Sexton in this game looked like more like an NBA point guard. Again, still some things you want to see him iron out, but go back and watch the tape. Go back and watch some of his best moments, and you're seeing a guy, I think, that is starting to look like a real NBA player, and that's really, really good. Kevin Love, also very good in this game, 16 points, 18 rebounds, had a big third and had a better second half as they kind of forced the ball to him a little bit, but you saw him at least move the ball and rack up a good night in terms of at least kind of helping the ball keep moving and with not sticking too much. And look, everyone in this team, I think, had good moments. David Nwaba, he had a couple iffy turnovers, but 4-6 from the field, had a really nice dunk at the end of the game. Channing Frye hit a bank three, which delighted the crowd. Nick Stauskas struggled really early on, had some really kind of moments, but also hit 2 threes, also was doing a good job moving the ball, had 5 assists and 6 boards in this one. I don't think his minutes were totally useless, and this is a team that had to kind of hodgepodge lineups together. Again, that lineup I read off before with Colin Sexton and Stauskas and Chris and Nwaba and Clarkson was a bizarre lineup, but it worked. All these guys kind of did contribute. Marquese Chris being the only guy on the team with a negative plus minus. And that includes Channing Frye and Deng Adel, who played a whopping 4 minutes combined, 2 apiece. But this is a group that I think everyone did something positive. You had Marquese Chris, and I think they should feel really positive coming out of this one. Even though, you know, whatever you want to say, it hurts their draft odds or anything like that. They are, you know, only a game and a half up on the Chicago Bulls now for the third worst record, but this was a really good win for them, a really good Colin Sexton game. Jetty had some good moments as well, despite some offensive struggles in the first half in particular. Free throw shooting was another big advantage for the Cavs, and this one, in the first half, this is a group that came out and was getting to the line. They shot 38% in the first half. This is a group that came out, again, in the second half and still took more free throws, but 20 free throws made on 21 attempts. The Raptors were 10 of 17. The Cavs were worse on offense in this game, did shoot better from three, but were overall just a worse offensive team than Toronto, at least in the first half in terms of field goal percentage, and really relied on the free throw line to get there with Kevin Love shooting 6 free throws, Osmond shooting 5, Sexton 4. That is a really positive thing, and I think they won a game that was sort of ugly in points, but they really put it on, and it was a really cool game to see live because the crowd was more into it than I've seen in a long time. We're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear from today's sponsor, MyBookie, and you're also going to hear from Kevin Love talking about the Marquese Chris Serge Ibaka fight, which was captivating to see live. But stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers.
I saw that at the corner of my eye because I was up. It was 1 second left, and I was like out at the 3-point line trying to get LD's attention, yelling at him because I thought we had 1 second left. We were going to run a play right before the end of the third quarter. And then I saw the commotion going on. And, you know, I kind of stepped and saw it. And then it happens so fast. You like almost everybody almost wants to like run out there or check what's going on. So it was just out the corner of my eye. I saw it. It was broken up quick, but that's usually how it goes.
Today's episode of Locked On Cavaliers is brought to you by MyBookie. The first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a number 16 seed last year? Can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, and even if you don't, MyBookie is a place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, the multiple bracket guy or girl. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is that they pay off fast when you win. I'm saying 48 hours, you're getting paid. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash. Deposit with MyBookie today with the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Thanks again to MyBookie for sponsoring Locked On Cavaliers. Now let's get into the bad things from this game, which are not a ton, but there are some. So I would say that Jetty Osmond is a place we're going to start. So Jetty had a bad first half, 2-10 from the field, and despite from good moments, really struggled to get any good looks off. And when you look at the full context of his game, you're seeing the shots he's missing as being some of the things that are really going to help him get to the next level. So he's not at a role or at a point in his career where his offense is going to remain consistent. Kawhi Leonard guarded him for a huge chunk of this game. That's going to impact Jetty. Osmond finished this game with 6 of 16 shooting, 19 points. That's a good number in terms of raw points. But he has these moves where he beats his man, gets into the paint, or gets it, you know, on the baseline. He leaves his shot short with a floater or a pull-up jumper. And those are the shots he has to make. If he can start hitting those with consistency, it's going to help him get to another level as a player. It's going to make him more dangerous on the back end of plays. Again, to his credit, I think Jetty made some tough shots. He had a really nice left-handed hook on the block in this one, on a post-up that was just very crafty. He had 7 assists, was really moving the ball well, had some nice chemistry with Ante Zizic in the pick-and-roll. There were moments, if fleeting, where he was out of the range of Leonard's freakishly large hands and had open looks to the basket. He just was not converting in the way you'd want to. This is going to happen again. It just stands out to me more, particularly in that first half where Kevin Love was not getting the number or type of shots that you'd expect him to get if the Cavs offense is going to succeed or be functional or anything like that. Not a huge concern. He is struggling a little bit late. He's a bit streaky. He's a second-year player in his first real NBA season. He's still figuring himself out. It's fine. Just kind of note that there are little things even when you watch that I think Jetty can get a little bit better at, and I think Monday's game is an example of that. I thought 4 first-half shots for Kevin Love was rough. So he had some good first-half moments. My favorite play of the game was literally him sprinting back to stop the ball and stop Kyle Lowry from getting into lane, which the Cavs have not done all season. That legit was my favorite play of the game. But 4 first-half shots for Love is really tough. They need to get him the ball to sort of have a functional offense, and they really had a hard time getting him the ball in spots that they've been feeding him of late. So I don't know if that's Siakam. I don't know if that's the type of defense Toronto is running. I would need to watch the game again and on television to sort of properly evaluate that. But that, to me, was just sort of my first glance look at that. This is some bad defense this game as well. I thought they just had some bad moments where they're tracking the ball and aren't tracking it, to put that correctly. So in one case, at the end of the first quarter, Jeremy Lin just got free because no one stopped him, and then he hit a 3 that cut the game to 1 when the Cavs were 4. It didn't ultimately matter, but those are the type of mistakes a good team does not make. A team that is disciplined, a team that has an organized defense, all of those boxes you want to check off as being a functional NBA team. Those are the types of things you're going to want to see the Cavs do a year from now if they're going to be better. Colin Sexton really needs a floater. Shooting like 31% on shots in the 3 to 10 feet range. It's something I touched on in the positive section. He just doesn't have any touch on the ball when he gets into the middle of the lane. I don't know if I would need to go compare other point guards like De'Aaron Fox or whoever from these last couple seasons to see how that compares to other guys. I know with the rim, he's below a lot of these guys, and he's getting a little better there, and is getting a little bit better at finishing with creativity, or at least attempting to. But in that 3 to 10 feet range, if he's not pulling up, he doesn't really have any shots there, and pulling up there can be tough. He needs a really good floater. He needs, I think, if I was going to look to see if he was going to add one shot to his game for the next season, I would really say a floater, because it's going to allow him to finish over some guys a little bit easier. It's going to allow him to not have to just barrel into guys and hope he gets a foul call when he's not the biggest guard in the world. It's a shot that will help him come in handy. It'll allow him to just be a bit more of a functional scorer, especially if he's attacking closeouts and stuff and the team has a good, you know, rim protector in there, or there's just a body there. That floater is going to come in handy, and he just has no touch on it when he goes for it right now. And that's going to take some time. It's not the easiest shot. It's a craft, but if he can get there, it would be really big. Offensive execution does remain a problem for this team, even when they end up putting up a bunch of points and they're kind of free-flowing towards the end of the second quarter, where Love and Sexton run a pick-and-roll against a zone in the last possession of the half, and then Jetty has to throw up a bad floater because that's the only shot they could get off. The Cavs are really bad at executing situations where they just need a bucket. It's something they're going to have to figure out. I don't expect it to be solved this season, but moving forward, that's just one of those other little small things to watch. Some tough David Nwaba moments in this game. Airball the three, had three turnovers, a little sloppy for him, which was kind of abnormal. He still had some good moments, still cut well. Struggled a little bit against Pascal Siakam on defense too. Siakam just much taller and leaner than him, and maybe that's why, but not the best David Nwaba game. And if you listen to the show, you know I love me some David Nwaba. And because it's obligatory at this point, Marquese Chriss cannot set a screen to save his life. Marquese Chriss is literally the worst screener I've ever seen. He, at one point, allowed, I think it was Brandon Knight, to get trapped because he just didn't, like, use his actual body. He just kind of went there and then allowed Knight, it was either Knight or Sexton, to just get trapped. He doesn't use his body. You know, he had a foul later in this game where he, if he would have just, like, actually rotated and stood his ground, it would have been a good defensive play, but instead he just flailed. Again, the athleticism has really had a chase down block in this game. He does things where you're like, oh, like Marquese Chriss perking up a little bit, and you get interested because he is super athletic and super young still and everything. But there just is a raw level of skill, a baseline level of skill that is just not there, and I think really needs to be there if he's going to be something in this league. You know, him and Ante Zizic are about the same age. I'm going to look this up now to kind of give you an idea. So he is born July 2nd, 1997, and he's 21. So Ante Zizic, the other Cavs young big on this team, is 22, born January 4th of 1997. So they're born in the same year, you know, about half a year apart. Just, they're different players, they're different body types. It's not a 100% fair comparison. But look at the polish Zizic has on screening and dropping back on defense and putting up shots and stuff like that. The things that he's good at, he has some polish on his game. With Marquese, you see in Ante Zizic the Vitali Potapenko, who worked a lot with him. You see the player development work that has been put into him with the Cavs and, you know, when he was in Europe. He was a pro at a much younger age. You know, he wasn't like rushed into playing for the Phoenix Suns. He's been a pro since like 2013-14. He's been in this profession for a longer time than Marquese Chriss. Marquese Chriss looks like a guy that has been playing basketball for like 6 months and is just still learning how to do stuff and when he can apply his body and stuff. He looks like he just needs a severe amount of player development work to get that polish. Again, him and Zizic are not that far apart in age. You see the amount of polish that Zizic has just by virtue of his experience and the work that has been put into him by the Cavs, largely, once he's come to the NBA. All right, you're going to take one more break. You're going to hear from Kevin Love because he is perhaps not going to play on Tuesday night in Philadelphia against Embiid, Simmons, Butler, Tobias Harris, and the Sixers. You're going to hear from him when he was asked postgame about what he can do to help a young team get ready for that. Just hear from him, and then we're going to be back to talk about that game and what is on the line for them on Tuesday. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers.
And a team that's big and can play many different ways and has major firepower. So I think that's one of the things I had to learn pretty early coming into this league. You know, I had to, for example, play Dirk or Tim Duncan in Texas and then fly back and play KG in Boston the next night in Minneapolis. So. It's definitely a grown man's league, and you got to be ready for anything that comes at you. You got to have success, you got to have some failures, and you got to do it both, pretty quickly, because there's always a game the next day or the day after that. So you just got to wrap your mind around that. But I think we'll enjoy it tonight. Get our bodies ready, get our minds ready, and tomorrow's gonna be a tough one.
All right, and we are back with the final section of today's Locked On Cavaliers. So here's what you need to watch for Tuesday night, Cavs Sixers in Philly. A tough game for the Cavs. Joel Embiid's back looked great on Sunday against the Indiana Pacers. So as I look at this, it does not seem to me like we're going to see Kevin Love play. I don't think we're going to see Delly, John Henson, obviously, Tristan Thompson, Larry Nance Jr. play. Love, they're taking it, they're still going to maybe not play him on back-to-back, because that's the vibe I sort of get. I don't know if that's explicitly been said. I could have missed it. Nance Jr. did not practice. I doubt they bring him back before on the second night of a back-to-back like that. Delly had a concussion. Don't really have a good timetable on that. You obviously want to be cautious with brain injuries. Second, third, Tristan Thompson, he has to go through a full practice before returning. So the Cavs are going to be patchwork like they were against the Raptors, but don't have Kevin Love to prop them up. So it's even a little bit worse. So I don't know what that means for the starting lineup. It could be Chris. You could go Channing Frye. I would guess Chris or Nwaba would be the likely guys you would start just to match up with Philly, because they're going to go Ben Simmons, Redick, Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, and Embiid. So you're going to see Zizic out there guarding Embiid. We'll get to that more in a second. And then you kind of just got to make the rest work. Tough matchups for everyone about there. It's not the easiest game for them. Matchup-wise, the Cavs are smaller. Philly is obviously very big and has a lot of stars. Tough game, even if Kevin Love's playing, but no Kevin Love makes it even more of a tall order. Matchup thing number one for me to just sort of watch here is Ante Zizic versus the thing and the monster that is Joel Embiid. He is obviously a fantastic defender, one of the best in the NBA. How can Zizic do posting up in this one? Does he get the kind of looks you sort of hope he would get, and that he can get against a guy that good? It's sort of a litmus test game for Zizic. Not a huge thing if he does really, really bad, because Embiid's, again, really, really good, but that, to me, is just something to watch there. Secondly, let's see how Jetty does defensively. I don't know who he's going to guard, so what the Cavs do defensively here is going to be really interesting. You know, there's an argument to be made that they should, try to play Nwaba. Like, their best five in this one might be like something like, Sexton out there, if you want it, because he's been playing well and all that. Jetty, Nwaba, Chris, and Zizic or something like that. Like, that's not exactly the most appetizing lineup you've ever heard of, or one you necessarily even want to watch play NBA basketball for 2.5 hours of your life on a Tuesday night. But if you look at matching with Philly, that's sort of the way you need to go. Stauskas has length, so you could put him out there too, at least because he's a little bit bigger than like Clarkson and stuff, who is going to play, but he's just a little bit smaller. Jerome Boston game would actually be useful here, but obviously his two-way deal has been burned through. So what do they do with Jetty to me is just the big indicator, because that'll set the tone for what other matchups they have. You know, do they just go straight up and that means he's guarding, you know, Jimmy Butler or Tobias Harris? You know, a lot of this might depend on what they do with Nwaba, who takes Kevin Love's spot in the starting lineup. If it's Nwaba, you know, you could have him guard Ben Simmons, and then you could put Jetty on, you know, Jimmy Butler, and put, you could just kind of make it work with the other stuff, or put like Knight on Butler, I guess, and just kind of hope that it works, and like put Redick on, and put Sexton on Redick, and have him chase him around. Like, you're going to have suboptimal things, but you have to just kind of find the lineups and ways that can make it work. And Jetty, depending on who else starts and everything, will sort of be the guy that sort of indicates where everyone else is going to be. If Nwaba does not start, he is going to guard maybe not Simmons, but he'll probably guard Butler or Harris. And then if, you know, if Nwaba starts, maybe he gets the other guy there, or he gets Simmons, or just something like that. It's just a tough, weird matchup. Philly just creates these sort of organic, weird lineup things because of how their roster is built. And lastly, let's just see how Colin Sexton does. Ben Simmons will probably guard him. He guards a bunch of point guards. How does Colin do in this one against a guy who's a lot bigger than him and is a very good defender, moves his feet well, all of that. So that is just something to watch here in that one. I don't expect the Cavs to win this one. And if you're worried about the draft, that is a good thing. So last thing today is draft positioning is a big deal Tuesday. So if you're looking at tank worthy games, the Knicks play the Pacers Tuesday night, the Bulls playing the Lakers. That is huge tank games. Mavs hosting the Spurs is as well, but that's more affecting Atlanta than it is the Cavs or anybody else. So the Cavs right now, according to Tankathon, are only a game and a half up on the Chicago Bulls for the third worst record in the league, which means you get the even odds of being in the top three. If you look at the tank situation right now, the Bulls have lost two in a row. The Cavs have won that one in a row. New York remains atrocious, having lost six in a row. With Dallas having lost five in a row, the Lakers losing five in a row. So there's a lot of competition in these lottery odds. I think they're going to be chaotic no matter what. The Cavs cannot control the chaos that is the NBA lottery. But this is an important game for the standings here. The Cavs could, you know, if they lose and let's say the Lakers win that game against the Bulls, you know, they get a little more cushion. If they win and let's say the Bulls lose, it gets a little bit tighter there too with those teams just getting a little bit closer. There's still a bunch of season left. There's still a lot of games to be lost. But this is sort of where we're at with that. And again, I think that the lottery is going to be crazy. You know, some of these teams are going to slide, and we don't really know exactly how this is all going to shake out. You could hit Tankathon a bajillion times and get a bajillion different results, but the further the Cavs do slip back, the lower they can fall in the draft. You know, if they go to four, they could pick as low as eighth, and that's much different in a draft that seems to really only have a couple guys that are super, super studs. Even if there's a lot of maybe good players later on, guys that will turn out to be good players, the guys, teams, and the Cavs are going to feel really good about are not going to be available at eight. So let's follow the tank. I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league at this point, but, you know, if they could finish third worst, that's probably a good thing for them. So that's going to be it for today's show. I will be back tomorrow recapping Cavs Sixers, talking through something positive with this team as well on Wednesday's show. If you have questions you want answered in our next mailbag, you can submit those to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. A 5-star review on Apple Podcasts guarantees your question gets answered. And if you're the sort, check out my 2-for-1. Check out Jackson Flickinger's great things we learned this week column that went up yesterday, and we'll have a bunch of drafts of coming from Trevor Magnotti soon as well. So thank you for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for Tuesday, March 12th. Cavs beat the Raptors. It was fun. Maybe the Cavs just own the Raptors' souls when it gets to be quote-unquote springtime in Northeast Ohio. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.